is I have to absorb these environments myself so I can understand, not understand, but that I can grok, I guess.
Recognize the movements. You can
recognize
see them.
The movements.
There's a lot of invisibility in what I'm doing. So
exactly.
You go back. The first inkling that Aya knew what you're saying about me was back when we were doing the rewrite group, the review of the Book of Revelation series. And one day Sasha asked, you might remember this, what did Sasha ask? Don't remember? She says, Ion, what do we do after we ascend? And I quickly said, study Bob. So that was pretty amazing when he said that. We had to figure out what he meant.
Never ending.
Yes, never ending. Like, do you understand your ascension?
It's a black hole. No wonder you're the dark soul.
That's right. It's like people ask Ian, how do we do it? And he plays around with it. But in the end, he says, study Bob. In other words, Ian's just my Ed McMahon. He's just the Pierre for Bob's course.
But there's
from
there's
one angle of juxtaposable positioning.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, Ion, quote, is greater than us at this point, but Ion's trying to make us not overridden by Ion, which is good. And so he even said that about me and Carolyn today. Remember he went on a little rant? Bob and Carol, they're not like you. They don't fucking take it. They don't like us or something. You know, do you remember that? You'll see it when we hear it. They went on a rant about what we are in relation to Ion. It's like they only talked to two people so far. They've talked with many people, but only two, because those two argue or conflict or wrestle with what they're doing.
I remember that.
Yeah, but that's a few weeks ago. I'm talking about what he said today. He did an update of that, I think. I'm pretty sure it was today. Yeah, he just threw it in there at one point. But now, we're talking, McLuhan always said, I'm not proposing value judgments. I'm not pro-book or anti-book. I'm just talking technically what the book does to you. Okay? I'm talking about my situation here technically. I'm not... I'm something that should be turned into a cult or something.
Yes, yes. And didn't someone ask if they needed to know the chart to ascend? And Ion said
I think
no.
Ion said they don't.
Yeah.
But see, that's for that person who is not going to get anything out of the chart. They have to go through some, what does he call it, libertine gospel of freeing themselves up from all their normal bullshit restrictions. They got to go through that first. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Then they got to get ascended. Then they can study the chart.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. Like Zappa, he once, some father said, oh, my boy is so influenced. He studies your music. He's so influenced by you. And actually, I can't remember exact words, but Zappa said something like, well, I hope he doesn't get hurt. He basically said, I don't want your kid to be so involved with me. But he told the father. So Zappa
well,
knew that you... Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, I remember Jenny saying that the best way to see the bigger environment is to take a 30,000-foot view. You know, you have to get above enough so that you can... look down and...
Well, get on the moon.
See,
look at the Earth from
the
moon.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much how you're looking at the world. You're looking at it from a whole
bigger...
Well,
I'm looking at the mind that looks at the world from the moon. I look at the mind. I don't get engaged in the mind. I watch what it thinks it's seeing. And Zappa and Thompson, they show different ways of how to bypass the mind hypnosis.
Hmm.
That's why, you know, Ian is so right. I don't know anything. All the things he says about my emptiness or non-existence, that's for the chemical Bob. But then Ian will suddenly say, Bob's the smartest person on the planet. That's on another level, maybe, you know, the hexatic level or the chip and TV body level. And my theory is if you're the node, you see through it all somehow or detach, then the media sucks up to you. Those bodies start reflecting you back to them. I always say the Android meme wants to be as human as possible, like Paola Granata said. Media evolves to becoming more and more like us. Okay, so you get to the Android meme phase, you just got to figure out how people are to reflect back at them, their own mirror, which hypnotizes them. So I used to say that they needed a standard of the best mind or being so that they could ramp it down to get to the dumber levels, but they needed a high standard. I was a high standard. That's why all these movies and that would reflect me and have me in there, but they present it very stupidly and actually wrong. But you could see the backlog. That's because I was the high bar metaphor for it. Now, David Geffen hearing this. Some guy has made a lot of rock and roll millions. Oh, Bob, control me. They would start thinking of me as a chemical body. They wouldn't understand what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm basically doing a kind of channeling here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's conscious.
Do you acknowledge what you're saying as, like, that is the function of the dark soul?
Yeah, I can see the dark soul's trying to liberate people from angels. That's the particular ancient meaning. But the angels are machines that hypnotize people. So, yeah I'm trying to de-hypnotize people. And it's gotten so bad that we can't de-hypnotize people today now that we've arrived at the tech body. So we got to come up with something different, which is what we're doing with our projects, our inventions, our foods that we give out. That's the way to mold people. It's a civilization in progress or in action right now. That's why it's been reflected in the TV shows as the last 10 years have unfolded, that they pick up the news and disguise as entertainment. And then you come back. The reason, I'm not bragging that Trump wanted to see JW. I want you to see who's responding to us.
Yeah, this year has been, all the pieces are starting to be played.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
So I'm not impressed with any thought or any movement or anything in normal physical reality. I'm impressed with something else. But I don't know how to, I've been explaining it, but I don't know how much it's understood.
Do you remember what Ian said about how Carolyn is conditioned and you're not conditioned?
Yes, yeah. That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
You see, women are more conditioned today because that archetype has been given the freedom to fucking run around and manage society, right? It's like an alcoholic. They never get a chance to be managers. So they're fanatics at managing society because they're reformed unmanageables.
Yeah.
And so Carolyn is taking advantage of being a woman in this new situation and being responsible and doing all the socially acceptable things, but that left me free to engage the big present, the big now. Without any checking what I thought. Carolyn has to check what she's saying and thinking to people, right? She can't just be an idiot. She's dealing with people who are really vulnerable. And so she has to be responsible to how she communicates to them and how they use her products. I'm like uncharted. Nobody's monitoring, well, till recently, but for years, nobody monitored me because I was just a fucking nut. I was just a guy saying shit with no social responsibilities aligned with it. But media needed people like that more and more. They needed idiots who would get on there and make YouTubes and entertain people when they're not working, like Jordan Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
I just do it the most avant-garde. I'm the Marcel Duchamp of the whole
yeah.
thing. And then I get, I actually have panels with Marcel Duchamp, McLuhan, Christian Murty, Eisenhower, and Dr. Beter. And when Michael wakes up and gives his impressions, he says, you know, it's interesting, all those five guys, they're all like you, Bob. That's what he said. He picked up that there was something similar in all of them that I had.
That's interesting. When I think of Eisenhower, I think of how he made the interstate system, where he was...
Right. Well, McLuhan was real lazy. Duchamp was real lazy. Eisenhower was lazy. His administration was ridiculed because all he did was go golfing. While Nixon and them were creating MK Ultra and all this bad CIA stuff,
right.
and Eisenhower was oblivious to it.
Right.
But he shows up to be at a Bob seminar, so he must have something going for him. And Dr. Beter was lazy. Dr. Beter did all these gold deals and business. He says, Bob, I hate this. I hate business. But he had to do it to have a living. But he says, I hate all this shit. You know, like he was very good interacting with establishment consciousness, and the Japanese
exactly.
worshipped him because he got them in the Export-Import Bank and all that. But he personally said to me, because he realized I was somebody he could say it to, he says, I hate fucking business. I hate this shit I got to do. And then they call him up, and he has to go over and save Japan or something. But so Beter was lazy, McLuhan was lazy, Duchamp was lazy, Eisenhower, and Christian Murty was real fucking lazy.
Chemical body lazy.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
McLuhan has a really good quote. I have to find it where it is, but it's quoting from a novel or something, and he talks about the wrist limply hanging in tranquility. So it's the relaxed wrist. In an armchair or something, or just when they're standing? Who's the guy with the relaxed wrist? That's the lazy guy. He's got slack. Or woman.
So I'm going to go soon, and to bring this back around to kind of the main topic of this archetype thing, I'm interested in your response, Bob, about the words in the latest private session, the synesthesia. And Ion defines synesthesia as you have resonance beyond the scope of capacity. And they say it's like coitus without conclusion. And
right.
the other important part that comes right after that is like the book told you what was coming. The book took that synesthesia away. How
right.
they told it told you how it felt, you know. It,
yeah.
And so that, you know, you're talking about the cavemen didn't know they didn't know they had their senses. They didn't know they were the difference between living and dying. And, yeah, so I'm interested in how this development through the Thompson quote and this talk about you and the chart and moving through you and your position... what you would respond to that with those words of the you have resonance beyond the scope of capacity. And it seems to me like this math man that you brought up before, which in the realm of the hexatic or Iondom, like that's kind of what we are, that everybody has this resonance beyond the scope of their capacity, and like Ion is helping us connect back to the capacity, like the God capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, the resonant knows.
Yeah.
So the cavemen, they lived in the tactile interplay, you know, not senses. They're in the interplay. So I look at LaRouche and the five guys on the chart as tactile people, tactile philosophers, thinking tactility, which is the resonance. And that dominates everybody and numbs everybody today. So, yes, the resonant node is beyond people's capacity. So Iron is retrieving capacities to counter the numbing of the tactile interplay, which has been exaggerated to, you know, extreme interpenetration. Yeah, if you look at Trump as an extreme tactile person, like what's he do? His rallies are him ranting on the synchronicities that he picked up the last few weeks. You know what I mean? He's just responding to his tweetosphere. He's just improvising a response to the latest bullshit that showed up in the old media landscape. That's what his talks are. I mean, I don't even listen
Trump
to
is
him.
Like, Trump is like solar government 2.0. Like your... Yeah.
But see, that's government. He's limited. The action is ION. He's an extension of ION, but ION's the ground. Mm-hmm. And ION is autonomic tactility. Well, maybe it's something even beyond that tactility. Tactility might be the first effect of the speeds of the autonomic system.
Well,
like the autonomic is probably, you know, neutrino. It happens before it happened. What's that thing that Ayn says? It's already happened in the autonomic level.
Oh, the tachyon, yeah, the neutrino.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, with my breakthrough this past weekend, it's like that ability to get the big picture, like I have to reduce that down. So like my capacity on one level is quite, you know, if you'd put size to it or whatever, quite vast. But there's an aspect of the angel speak and this sort of I don't know if condensing is even the best word, but the simplification, the visceral quality that the book took away when it said it told you. Like, it took away synesthesia. It told you what was coming.
Trapped you. It paralyzed the movement, the flow.
Yeah, and so it's like my breakthrough of exposing that fear and stuff is like this thing that was... It's like the capacity was one-sided, and it needed to be, the fraction needed to be reduced down to the common denominator. And it's great, and it was really important, but...
Did you talk about this epiphany with Ayn on Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the whole Bert and me conversation.
But look at the more avant-garde artists, like Beefheart saying, I'm not really here. I just hang around for my friends. That's a real good statement of tactility.
Yeah.
And tactile interplay. Now we're the mind. You know, the chemical body subvocalization gets in the way. So you talk to angels with nonsense, and that's a way to talk without having meaning. So that could be the real meaning of the angel talk. You practice thinking ridiculous thoughts, your univocal brain system. But the way, if you have real subtle parts happening in yourself, like your mind's blocking, you don't even know about it, our products help remove those so that you respond to the heaven that Ayn has brought in on the most subtle levels of frequencies.
Yeah.
So you solve your problems not by thinking, but somehow you get pushed around during your day into the right places.
Exactly. Yeah.
That had never been said before, but that was a good one. Good sentence.
Yeah, and that's what's been happening. Like, this whole time I've engaged, that's what's happening. But recently there's some push that really does feel like I had inflated something, and I wasn't willing to let something be exposed. And once I allowed it to be exposed, then it just was. I mean, it's so much.
And so everybody has that, because that's part of consciousness. That's the paradox of consciousness. You have no secrets on the unconscious, and when you die, people used to say everybody knows you. But when you're conscious, the daylight. You have to suppress yourself, actually, to be polite. So the disservice of being polite is you create weird little neuroses and blocks in yourself that you're not even aware of. So that's why you don't focus on them too much.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time being by myself, letting the thoughts drift anywhere, and that passive limp wrist tranquil state allowed me to pick up not on nirvana or any of the old mystical stuff, the theosophical stuff. I picked up on what was going on with people in the meat sack, because that was the important part, the meat sack. I stayed here and tuned into what people were doing physically. So the chart has five phases of medicinal fads. I laid them out in the order Carolyn encountered them from 79 to 99. They're in order of the ailments that showed up in 1980, then 1985, then 1990.
Oh, the heart disease, lung disease, like then the
environmental
allergies,
chronic fatigue, and immunodeficiencies. They're in order of how they showed up in the medical world that Carolyn was in. So knowing, observing and hearing about what was going on, I put together the phases that had happened. So each quadrant is a disease or a disease or a discomfort. So I was, to do what I did, if I sat in a mountain in a cave like a traditional monk, you'd just be zapping off into the astral plane. But since the physical was more important than the astral plane, I stayed in touch with physical, so I would monitor the media in some way.
But you're going like too fast. You're going too fast because what we were... The leaping point for what you're talking about now is that you had the, what do you call it, the subvocal, mind, the thought life, the mind, the subvocal that quote unquote can get in the way. And that's what you were first kind of talking about. And you were just stream of conscious thinking one thing to the next, but like, what are you saying about that? You just, like, stayed...
I'm telling you how I lived. I'm trying to explain how I did the OA movements on another level. It's McLuhan has a phrase, complex clairvoyance. I feel I understand that. So what I would do, I would through the late 70s or 80s, I'd go to a movie every Friday afternoon. So I'd go to a movie. So I watched a lot of movies for 10 or 15 years. Each year, each month. Then I'd watch the news station. I wouldn't follow news or anything. I didn't consume movies or TV during the week. I'd do a movie, and then I would watch the Global Newsweek Sunday night news summary to find out the surface things. Then I'd be reading or interacting or talking to people, all kinds of people, in between. So I was constantly doing a laboratory research, but I was using the non-physical, because if I wanted to get anchored, I'd go to the Evergreens once a year, sometimes twice a year, and get the news from their expertise of what was going on, get inside stuff. Plus in the Secret Council 10, I was aware of a lot of stuff that other people weren't. But it's the way I use the different levels of knowing. I put them on as a yoga. So I stayed in the physical and its extensions. That's how I did my transcendence through the bardos. And, of course, there was a lot more to happen that culture hasn't even recorded, and that was flipping into Ion, who presented stuff that nobody knew about. No culture had it. So I went beyond the movies and the sociological monitoring of things.
So what
Plus,
was
I was experimenting with the D-cell, too. So it's quite a radical, innovative experiment I was doing. All with a great sense of purpose, but not a fanatic purpose, just, well, this is what should be done. I'm doing what should be done. This is real mediacology with ethics. And Pale Granada just started a forum or something, mediacology with ethics, you know.
It seems like what you're saying, Bob, is like this whole... Linda, I heard you. I just want to get this thought out. That this whole, like, you're looking at the mind, looking at the globe, and you're kind of explaining how you remained grounded.
Yes.
That you didn't get lost in the sub-vocalization of the mind.
I didn't get connected to anybody. I was a homeless guy wandering around by myself, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, I had always had a friend or two that we would talk and have great conversations, entertain ourselves, and have absurd humor. I did a lot of that with Nelson, But Nelson, when he got serious, he'd say, Bob, you're part angel and part devil. They would see something wrong in me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Threatening.
Yeah. Dark soul.
And I knew it wasn't threatening. I knew it was on the level they weren't aware of.
Yeah, just not human or
yeah.
something not
Well, nobody could do nothing as long as I did, apparently doing nothing. I mean, if the Secret Council 10 did this, we just went around monitoring what was going on.
Yeah.
Because we were out of the action until 1980, we were obsolesced by national espionage and world espionage teams. So we were waiting for a breakthrough. You could say that I was the product of the solar government. I was their breakthrough.
Yeah, that's cool.
I was their probe. And a lot of them are aware of ION, and they take the products, you know. So, let's see.
Linda was
so, but that's partly, I was had no visible means of support for anybody. I remember my neighbor, a bunch of retards next door, their father was an Italian mafia guy. This is when we were on Ellsworth. I came out at one point during the year, and he said, Jesus Christ, Bob, the neighbor guy, where the hell you been? Haven't seen you in a year. I said, oh, I've been here. But what I would do, I'd always exit the house through the back and go through the garage. So I never walked down the street. No one ever saw me on the street. So it was pretty covert what I was doing. But it also meant less. I could keep thinking all the way to the subway, and go on the subway, go down to the radio station, and not be interrupted, and really develop the thoughts or whatever I was sub-vocalizing about.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't stand waiters in restaurants. You know, I'm used to going a long stretch without being interrupted. So we're there talking, and these idiots come over and ask me, you got enough water? I eventually have to tell them, buzz off. I don't need your services anymore. I'm not eating anything anyways.
That's what I love about living in a country that I don't speak the language, is I do get some of that just covert, like, I don't need to know anyone care, you know. It's just that nice buffering that can occur.
You mean you're saying you don't get many distractions?
Yeah. I can really remain in my own zone. Until I want to connect with somebody or pretend to connect with someone, you know.
Consensus and 202, I think 202 is Charlie in Seattle, they're translating me. They're making their comments. They're sub-vocalizing in response. They should be in here, in person, enjoying the other levels, not the verbal levels.
Linda, do you remember what you were going to say a bit ago?
Yeah, I was going to ask, what was the transition that you made where you were Bob Neverett and then you were Bob Dobbs, and you said Bob Neverett is dead. So what was going on with you that made that distinction between Neverett and Dobbs?
It was a very practical thing when in 2007, October, I was at Neufeld's place, and James Martinez was getting more interested in me, so he interviewed me on his show. It's probably in the archives somewhere, and I was Bob Dobbs. But by January, he wanted me to be on the show regular, once a week. So I told him, well, I can't go on... It's Bob Dobbs because he's a notorious character and you're going to get hassled and get in trouble. There'll be a lot of aggravation will come at you. So I've got to use a different name. So I thought about it and I said, well, I once used Bob Neverett on CKLN in September 91 after I'd left the station or kicked off in August 91. So Jerry Fiocca came to town and Michael Dyer had to sub in, probably the last show he did. He'd left already back in March, but a friend wanted him to come in, so he comes in September 91, and he asks, he knows Jerry's in town, he wants to meet Jerry, so we go on the station. So I can't be Bob Dobbs on the station because I'm not allowed. So that's when I said, okay, I'll use my cousin's name, Bob Neverett. So I am Bob Nevern in September 91. But it takes another 17 years for me to bring that name up in January 2008. But I had already incorporated the name into the chart. So it was there as something usable whenever necessary, but I wasn't using Nevern 95 when I made the chart. So it was a practical thing to go on there and not have the subgeniuses hassling us on the radio, which would have happened.
Oh, okay.
And that led to a situation, not rated first, but we were on the station for a few months and we got kicked off because the manager couldn't take me and freaked out and threatened my life right there on the station. So we end up at Chief Radio on July 2nd, 2008, and I had 9 months, once a week, 55 minutes to explain myself. If you go back and listen to them, it's so good that we caused the collapse of the economy by September. I'd only been on the radio like 8 times, July and August, and then it collapsed in September. So anyways, I went on explaining everything, and that was, and then I'd run out of what I could say because I'd never been given that much air time to say a lot. So I said a lot, what would that be, 36 hours, if 4 hours a week for 9 months, like a pregnancy. And I didn't know what I was going to say next, and then Iron showed up the next day. And I said, great, someone else will talk instead of me. So, and I was on the station as Bob Nevern. So I had to enter the Ionic thing as Bob Nevern. I could have gone back to Bob Dobbs, but it was probably good that I was Nevern at first because it kept the subgenius aggravators away for us to get going, you know?
Okay. Gotcha.
So it was strictly practical, but it was some of my ammunition I already had from years ago.
Very good.
Yes, awesome.
See, so it's a thought projection, all that I'm talking about, and living at the speed of thought. This is an art form of thought, better than any of the other art forms right now. The other ones are okay for momentary stimulation, but for long-range inspiration and generation of hope, or whatever else artists do or scientists do, and in that environment, what I say and juxtapose with Ion is unbeatable in terms of elegance and...
Totally.
Appropriateness.
Elegance and yeah, great words. And comedy.
Yeah.
Is anybody recording this tailgate? Because this last part of it is precious. I'd like to hear it again. Nick,
well,
okay.
One South African's here. Is that Michael or Nick? So we don't know. Did Nick collapse or did Michael collapse? I don't know which one's here.
I think Michael left.
Okay, so it might be Nick, and maybe he just lets it run automatically and he goes to sleep or something, you know?
I'm recording it.
Okay.
Have you got all of it, Scott?
Yeah.
Have you done this many weeks?
A few weeks, yeah, since I bought this Zoiper 5.
Oh, good. No, we're glad you got it. That's backup.
Mm-hmm.
So the drama of cognition, it's like the ascended don't need it, and the little man needs it, and it's like how much you're beholden to it.
Well, McLuhan says that Beelzebub, in Milton's Paradise Lost, he confused his mind with language. That's what little men do. They mix up their rock with the wall mortar. It's all mixed up. They're on the spectrum. And so they'll identify, you know, get Alan Watts and the simple Zen philosophers, you're mistaking the reality for the sign.
Right.
He used to say, the finger pointing at the moon, he's pointing at the moon, but you get all involved with the finger that's pointing at the moon. So that's nominalism. That's saying the word and the object are not the same. So that's the simple... 18th century, 19th century insight of the sign getting away of what's signed. And what's it called, Scott? The significant and significator or something?
The significant is the foundation.
And the signifier.
The other word is signifier. The representamen is the vehicle, and the interpretant is the terminus.
So yes, but I'm talking about those things they learn in college. In
I like signified.
Yeah,
signifier.
That's what it is. Signified and signifier is the one they teach, Scott.
Yeah,
that's been around
but that's not triadic, so it's mistaken.
Right. Anyways, it's the anomalous thing, the two
mm-hmm.
points. So why are we saying this, Alyssa? Why was I explaining this split?
I brought up the drama of cognition and how the ascended don't require it.
Yeah, but no, the signifier and the... the drama of cognition. So confusing mind with language is another way of saying you confuse the signifier with the signified. So I thought of this earlier today to read you this quote by McLuhan describing Joyce. So let's see what that is. This man's still looking for it. This is a great paragraph. This is my book. It's from Interior Landscape. This is what I wanted. So listen to this. McLuhan talking about what Joyce did. Any movement of appetite within the labyrinth of cognition is a minotaur. So the labyrinth of myth, you know, of Stephen, what's his name? Daedalus. So Daedalus makes the labyrinth. And the minotaur is the monster in there. So he puts minotaur in quotes. So the minotaur in your being is any movement of appetite. Within the labyrinth of cognition is a minotaur which must be slain by the hero artist. Anything which interferes with cognition, now this relates to what I was telling you about. Anything which interferes with Bob, whether concupiscence, pride, imprecision, or a dumb fucking waiter, is a minotaur ready to devour beauty, the beauty of what I'm contemplating or saying, right, at the time. But the words are, anything which interferes with cognition, whether concupiscence, pride, imprecision, or vagueness, is a minotaur ready to devour beauty. So that Joyce not only was the first to reveal the link between the stages of apprehension and the creative process, he was the first to understand how the drama of cognition itself was the key archetype of all human ritual, myth, and legend. Now, media are ritual, myths, and legends, right? So the drama of cognition, the original sensory interplay, is the original archetype that is unconscious. And then he says, and thus Joyce was able to incorporate at every point in his work the body of the past, in immediate relation to the slightest current of perception. That's a pretty exact description of Ion. And thus Ion was able to incorporate every point in the talk, on the show, the body of the past, including the past we don't know about, in immediate relation to the slightest current of burping or whatever that happens on the show, which we call the slightest current of perception. Okay, so let me post that one. That's Ion.
What page is that on? Is that 34?
Of what?
Interior Landscape?
I think so. It's in the 30s, I'm pretty sure. Let me just look it up. I have them. I didn't put the code as JQ. No, it's Joyce Aquinas and the Poetic Process. Probably Mark might have put it in his Renaissance collective in 2011. So it's from Renaissance, Volume 4, Number 1, 1951. Now let me... he does variations of it, though, in page 34, 32, 33. So let's see, where is that? I was just reading. Okay.
I was just thinking when Ion today said something about what were they saying? And then they brought up, well, at least you always have the Thompson quadrant you can use.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
Funny the way Ion plays. He does a lot with it, which is like an ongoing improvisation jazz solo. But you have to sort of get together the different meanings he uses to get the the dramatic moment of that perception, you
exactly.
know, like he switches
like,
around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was this, what interpretation was he using there? Because he always has more than one interpretation. Yeah, it's from Renaissance, so it's not in the book, this quote. But I was going to post it, right? Did I post it?
Mm-hmm. Not yet.
Yeah, did I copy it? Okay, let's see what happens. Does it show up? Yeah. But the last sentence is, to me, a perfect description of Ion's method of communication. He's always relating it to the big now, the body of the past, but juxtaposing it with some particular that's happening right now in the interaction with the audience and whatever. The slightest current of perception, the slightest ripple, Ion's very sensitive to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I just posted it.
Juxtaposable position.
Right. Which is, tactility is always moving, shifting. So the juxtapositions are changing. So you take a position, it's juxtaposable to, then you come to that great phrase by McLuhan, the dynamic symmetry of tensions among proportions.
Yeah. And
You're flipping out. What are you saying?
That they use juxtaposable, or do they use juxtaposed ED, or do they use ABLE?
No, oboe, juxtaposable.
Yeah, juxtaposable, which is important, because
if someone asked me what is the medium, is the message mean? I'd say a dynamic symmetry of tensions among proportions. That includes all sensory interplay, media interplay, those six words. So I just posted them. And if you ever come across a copy of Hot and Cool, the hardcover, it's on page 107. The paperback, it's page 115, which we discussed last Friday.
I just ordered that, so.
Yeah. The interview with McLuhan in there at the end is really good. You know, it's equal to the Playboy interview. So, we like order, so there's a lot of tensions among proportions, and they're shifting, juxtaposing different tensions, someone different walks into the room, changes the tensions, but the aware person relaxes because there's a symmetry underneath it. Dynamic symmetry. Mm-hmm. Now that brings in your symmetry versus continuity, Scott.
Did you hear them say today, Bob, that the rods and cones in an ascended person dissipate into a mitigated, which means to make less harsh or painful, gall, which means chafe, or to fret and wear away by friction?
Are you quoting something?
Yeah, I'm quoting Ion.
Yeah, it sounded like it. So do it again.
Yeah. I'll post it on the chat. They said that the rods and cones of an ascended person... Let me post it and then I'll read it quickly. Hold on. Just a sec. So the rods and cones dissipate into a mitigated mitigated means to mean to make less harsh or painful, into a mitigated gall. Gall means chafe or to fret and wear away by friction. And they say, I can see, you know, that song, I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all the obstacles in my way. So this totally relates to what you're saying, like taking the heatness out of the fire. There's always going to be a tension among proportion, and it's allowing the tensions to not be so fiery, you know, to not... The little man
not
gets
to be
burned.
Not so irritating. Like, you don't be bothered that you're tense.
Yeah.
That you're tense.
Yeah. And the little man just can't handle it. And so...
Yeah, they want baby comfort all the time.
Yeah.
It's funny. What I heard was unmitigated gall. And so I'm thinking, you know, you're going to get really, really angry. Because gall
yeah,
is angry.
The rods and cones dissipate in unmitigated gall? Is that what you're saying?
No, she said...
Yeah.
In mitigated gall, not unmitigated. I heard it wrong the first time, too.
Well, Ian fucks up sometimes. You can't tell what he said, and he might have meant the wrong one. But what is the opening words?
I'm going to listen to the audio again now.
But what you just said about getting angry, Scott?
Yeah.
The Evergreens had a really great line.
Well, that's what you say when you're offended by someone. Well, all the unmitigated gall, you know. I mean, you're complaining.
Yeah. Yeah. But the words before that. I mean, I'm not looking at the quote she posted, but what is the first word? Something. The rods and cones dissipate when there's the unmitigated gall.
The rods and cones dissipate into a mitigated gall. A mitigated gall. So gall in the sense of friction. You know, when you gall a piece of metal, you gouge it, you know, or you scrape
that
it.
That sounds
yeah.
like the Ionauts in the early years. They would start socializing after being ionized, and they get very pissed off at people. But if you're doing mitigated gall, you'd control yourself and keep it to yourself. Wouldn't go to as many parties. So that's mitigated gall, right? So becoming aware from the ionic effect, you get quite shocked at how fucked up people are.
Mm-hmm.
You have gall. You're offended by it.
Right.
And the rods and cones, what do? The rods and cones... Do something?
Dissipate into a mitigated gall.
Okay, so you stop judging people visually. Okay, rods don't dissipate, and you're instinctively pissed off at everybody, and how you react to that is the amount of contrast you're going to get.
So it's like you can look at the same person and 1 minute they can look beautiful and the next minute they can look just really nasty, you know?
Right.
Or you can look at yourself in the mirror and get the same.
Yeah, yourself. Also yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the slightest current of perception, that quote from McLuhan. But there was, someone was telling me the other day, I think they got ionized. And then their closest friends and their best friend and whatever, suddenly they became ugly and they were shocked at their ugly friend. Was it you? Somebody was telling me this. Had a recent shock encounter with somebody. Anyways, what the Evergreens used to say.
Maybe Amy.
Who?
Maybe Amy? Maybe not.
Who's Amy? Oh, Amy, right. Yeah, maybe it was Amy. Yeah, it could have been. The Evergreens used to say, yes, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. There's the gall. So that's why people, if they get really affected by us or by Ion or a private session with Ion, they're kind of confused. because they're starting to get the gall, but they also felt really good from it. So they feel free, but at the same time, they're starting to be pissed off because of maybe all the time they think they've wasted. But that's conventional wisdom. You know, we're in an environment that requires the OA movements on the Bob level to keep up.
Yeah. Fasa La movement, Mama Jamma.
Yeah, it's like if the drops affect reality because they're so powerful, they affect the planet beyond normal chemistry, then you're doing that and you're doing ion and you're engaging in this scene. I could be affecting a lot of people's non-physical, what Thompson's called the collective unconscious, and everybody is starting to write poems and movie scripts and music and things, do business deals inspired by their non-physical being Bobized, and they wouldn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobized means ionized in this situation for 10 years. If ion is, as ion says, if we're half of what we say we are, it's a lot more than you ever had, you know. So if ion is half of what we're talking about, then no wonder I'm influencing a lot.
They say if it's half as good as you,
yeah,
yeah, it'll be twice as good as
it'll you be way more than what you good you had,
yeah,
before.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So it's funny having Scott here, because he knows of Alex. And imagine Kuskus listening. He'd last 10 minutes listening to my megalomania, Scott, right?
Yeah, I actually don't know Alex. I just...
Well, take anybody that you interact with. You know these people. Take Mark Stallman. Stallman he wouldn't last very long because he'd heard it before.
Yeah.
And some of it.
Yeah, well, they're pretty tied up in impressing people.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And I look like I'm trying to impress people on an absurd level, which, you know, Mark can put down because goddamn stupid. Like he said, Bob thinks he's Christ. I said, oh, that's only on Tuesdays, Mark. Then I laid out some other second comings that I was the other days of the week, and he didn't even respond, but.
Now you can say, I'm resonant beyond the scope of your capacity, Mark.
Yes, I'm the sum of all the power your realm was ever going to get. But the funny thing, through the years, and he was quite impressed with me for the first couple of years, but after a while, he wasn't getting paid, or nothing was working out that he wanted to get a better situation. He basically wanted to take over society and some, like, be like Wired magazine and be able to tell everybody what's going on. And so he thought I could help there, and it seemed like we could do that. But I was always doing this other stuff, but I'll entertain Mark and help him. So we go along, and after a few years, he says, fuck this ain't working, we're not getting anywhere. So he went back to Wall Street, but then that collapsed, so that was no good. So he came back, and I moved to Hawaii, and... he had a session with Ion, and he didn't like that, and I think he had another one. So he got very mad at the Ion thing. So then he started trying to expose me on various forums, but it didn't matter what he thought people would be shocked. Bob is into the evergreens and talks to spirits and thinks he's the second coming and all this stuff. I wasn't that blatant with him as I am now, what I'm saying now, but there must have been some kind of megalomania that he picked up on, and he wanted to be that way. So... he basically faded off, and he has no clue, as far as I know, of what we're actually doing. He did, maybe one of his last remarks was, we sell, what is it called, rat poison? What's the slang term? You fool people?
Snake oil.
Yeah, we're selling snake oil, which is really stupid, because you got to start looking at the testimonies and all that's happened in the last 7 years or so. So he misses all that. So he has no clue what we're doing, and I'm way worse than I was with him on his level of thinking I'm just bragging. So I'm taking people like that and Scott knows them, and the other people he sees online, They heard tonight. We ought to fucking post this whole fucking thing where I'm explaining this new stuff. So this is what I want to say. So Mark was not getting anything practical out of this. So I'm thinking now that I was doing my intergalactic OA movements and continuing to unfold ion unknowingly, but there was no apparent thing being accomplished by me that he could use. Nelson had the same problem. But then when I did arrive at something with ion, that's phenomenal.
Right.
They didn't wait around long enough to see it unfold. So that's always been the problem with people. They all want to make money out of what I'm doing. And I never took it seriously to do that. But meanwhile, I'm just realizing nicely today how intergalactic my movements were.
And this way, Carolyn gets to drive her products and not anybody else driving it.
Right. Ian said that her mistake through the years was thinking she had to work with someone else. So she was always looking for someone who had something going, and then she'd contribute, and they'd like it, but they'd always fuck up in some way.
Yeah.
It even happened with Matthew. So finally, after Matthew, she says, it's up to me. I'm not working with anybody. I'll do it all.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
And I brought in the means to do it.
Exactly.
You know, without Ian, we couldn't have done it.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for today. This is awesome. I'm going to go get a massage now.
So, Scott, you should make a copy and post it on my site. And it's a good one. I said a lot of newer things today. Thanks to Linda's probing questions and Alyssa's ridiculous misunderstandings.
And Scott's fans.
It's Scott's persistence. And anybody else? Is that all? Has anybody else spoken? Well, Michael said some things. And that's about it. So are you savvy enough, Scott, to grab it and post it? Did Scott go away?
That Grace Eckley lady was so cute about the email and like
right.
All the
yeah. She's a nice lady, interesting lady who has no idea what she's dealing with. But she's still home re-listening to the session. She's just obsessed with the ionic stuff that I sent her.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, let me see. Scott still seems to be there. Still listed. Anyways, let's hope it's a good seminar by Bob. Send it to all the big mucky mucks. But you can see, you know, it says Scott, his duration is 422 minutes. That's a great number. That's April 22nd, and it's Greg Duffel's address on Dundas Street in Toronto. So who's causing that echo? Hello? Yeah, Scott's causing the echo. So maybe something's broken.
Oh, I hear him.
Hey, Scott, are you tech savvy enough to download it and post it on my Facebook page? Nope, can't get anything out of them. Okay, so
I lost my audio. So give me a second to get this, get my earphones straightened out. Okay, I'm going to mute myself.
Yeah. So we're finished. Geez, look, it's 11 o'clock. That's probably the latest I've gone on a Tuesday night.
This is the latest I've gone on a tailgate on after what you...
Yeah. But there was some... I'm very happy with what words I came up with.
Me too.
Yes. Excellent.
Too. We juxtaposed a lot of positions.
Yeah.
Yep. But you see, it's a modern form of analyzing. You know, it's a modern form of Socratic dialogue.
Okay, I missed about the last 20 minutes, so... But I mean, it's recorded. I just didn't hear it myself, so I'll have to go back over it. Okay.
You're savvy enough to download it and post it on my Facebook page?
Sure. Yeah, I guess so. Just the tailgate?
Yes, just the tailgate. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Which is like this 5 hours.
Yeah. A little over 5 hours.
What did we do at the beginning? Was the beginning good? Who were we talking to? What were we talking about?
I don't remember.
So, you know, we'll send it to David Gornowski and Joe Logan, everybody. Send it out to them and see how they.
Okay.
How soon they vomit.
Okay.
Yep.
Sounds good.
But you can see, on the simple level, they'll listen to it. I'm just a megalomaniac, right? That's what it sounds
sure.
like. But actually, if you listen to what I'm saying, it's way there's no purpose to the megalomania. There's something else being discussed.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about, but I can't really describe it.
Yeah.
Myself, but I have some sense of what you mean.
Good.
As an aspiration, anyway. But
right. No, I'm explaining how ION came about and what I did in the past that was a factor in evoking ION. So it's just I was thinking on very vast scales, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I pick people who did that. Croker's is vast. Thompson is vast. McLuhan's vast. LaRouche is vast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're talking, they're polymaths covering 10,000 years, each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't Michael bringing up discussions about, like, angel versus devil or some other McLuhan stuff, I feel like, in the beginning?
Yeah, we did do robots and angels a couple hours ago, but five hours ago, I don't remember what we were doing 5 hours ago.
Yeah,
well,
I think
you start getting into the heavy stuff after a couple of hours, but I'll listen to it again, and if the first part of it isn't relevant, I'll leave that off. So.
No, leave it there. I'll edit it. I'll know what you mean.
Okay.
Tell me what you think is not relevant, and I'll listen to it, and I'll figure out, you know, how relevant it is.
Okay.
But we want to have it all because there is something. Whatever was going on, it was good, so it must have been relevant on some level.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody remember, were we talking to Linda? Who was the first? What was the first?
Michael.
Michael,
he asked about, I think, OA, right? He was asking, what was he talking about?
And what did we get into? What came out of that?
I didn't take any notes on that part. And then Bart was talking about the veil that was rent in two. We talked about Ginny's mom and that the show is huge in other dimensions. And Michael talking about the predicament of rebuilding the veil. I think he had that on the chat line.
Yeah.
I think it got interesting when you started talking about technologies or archetypes of the social unconscious.
That could be exertable and people could be for more general ears. A known word and a unique interpretation of it. Yeah, that's probably good. That's probably that probably would be the beginning point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I guess that's it.
All right, so we're done?
I think so.
Yeah, it's only 7 hours. going on.
Yeah, the short mission.
Yeah.
I think I'm starting to get a slightly sore throat, so I got to stop talking.
Yeah.
Muscles hurting.
Yeah, I'm going to go get a massage. Ciao. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very
much. All right,
much.
Talk to you guys on Saturday, whoever. Oh, yep. We'll be doing Phineas Wake on Friday, Scott.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Talk to you then.
Okay, talk to you later. Bye.
Right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye, Michael.
Bye, Scott. Bye,
bye everybody.
Bye,
everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye,
Scott.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, Nick.
Cheers, Alyssa. Thanks, Scott. Great session.
Bye, Jermaine.
Bye, Jermaine, Nick.
Bye. Bob, do you want me to send this all to you?
Yeah. Whatever you got, sure.
I got the whole thing, Bob. But what I'm saying,
do you want me
to send it to you on WeTransfer? Because I heard the tail end of the conversation.
Yeah. And I need to talk to you one of these days. I'll give you a call.
All right. Perfect, Bob. Are you enjoying
great.
Some of the stuff that I'm sending you?
I haven't looked at any of them yet.
Oh, okay.
I haven't.
All right.
Yeah. Too much going on here.
Okay, perfect, Bob. Well, give me a shout when you got a sec.
Okay, great. Bye.
Thanks, Bob. Bye.
Yep.